eighth wonder of the world, basically a geek show. And here are your hosts, Mike and Jack.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the ninth episode of the 50th episode of Basically a Geek Show. It's episode 59.
That was needlessly convoluted.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of what I was going for. I am Mike. With me, as always, is Jack.
What's up?
And, let's talk about the return of something that a lot of people had written off for good.
Me!
I mean, what?
In the realm of video games.
Oh.
Let's talk about cartridges.
Sex. Oh, yes, cartridges.
So, cartridges, Jack, when I first brought this to your attention, you said, no way, never going to happen, until I explained it to you.
Right, and then when you'd explained it to me, it had actually been something I myself had thought of, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. I just didn't really think of it, like, in the terms of a cartridge-type sense, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Now, cartridges have been missing since what generation?
The N64 was the last console to utilize cartridges.
Yes, both of its competitors, the
PS1,
Saturn, the PS1.
Yeah, the PS1 and the Sega Saturn. Yes.
They both use discs.
Yes.
Nintendo went to the GameCube, following in the next generation, the cartridge seemed to be relegated to handhelds. And it's kind of actually kind of stayed in handhelds. The Game Boy Advance had cartridges, and then, the DS, which followed the Nintendo DS, which followed the Game Boy Advance. They're not classical cartridges, but they kind of are, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, they remind me more of, like, the Hue cards for the TurboGrafx-16 and PC Engine. I mean, but yeah, I mean, they're basically cartridges, yeah.
And that's sort of the direction that I wanted to discuss cartridges in going forward, because right now, the format that Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft that they use for games, to print and press games, it's HD DVD.
Well, now, doesn't Sony uses Blu-ray, though.
Sony uses Blu-ray, yes. Microsoft and Nintendo use HD DVD.
Right.
Thing is, we are getting to the edge. We are getting to the edge of what a lot of these discs, be they Blu-ray or HD DVD, can hold. No Man's Sky, for instance, it's one of the E3 reveals that we talked about. It's this huge, expansive, they basically have an expansive, explorable universe that they put into a game. This game is so large that it's pushing the limits of what you can actually fit on a Blu-ray disc, and Nintendo and Microsoft are having similar problems.
How large is it?
Lol, with their HD DVD formats. So, the idea about the return of cartridges is that you can actually stick, they wouldn't be cartridges in the traditional sense. They'd be flash drives, basically, because you could stick a huge amount of data on a flash drive these days. More so than you can stick on an HD DVD or Blu-ray. So the idea is that, these gaming companies would go back to cartridges, and, you know, quote-unquote cartridges would basically just be casings for flash cards,
right,
that they put the game's data onto, because there's more room to work with in that format.
Right.
And, you know, we could talk about how that makes sense from a practical standpoint, but, you know, as from a consumer standpoint, I'd welcome it, because I remember back when I was a kid, back in the 1990s.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
But back then, you know, we had an SNES, a friend, you know, one of my friends had a Genesis, and then of course everyone had an N64. Game collecting, and of course of Game Boy, you know, the various Game Boy iterations, game collecting, you know, just the act of buying the games themselves was special because you'd have this drawer or a shelf of cartridges, and it just kind of made you feel good just seeing like all of them lined up and like, oh yeah, no, like there was something tangible to them. And yes, HD DVD and Blu-ray based, games, you know, there is a collecting aspect to it, but it just seems less substantial in cartridges. So if the technology is, and I'm not saying it will, but if the technology is moving in such a direction that cartridges make a comeback, even if they are in, you know, the form of flash drives, I have to say I'm excited because I think that would return some of the quote-unquote magic to just collecting games again.
Well, now, though, I mean, okay, when you say that you think it would return that kind of tangibility to it all, mm-hmm. Now, what are you envisioning? Are you envisioning just a drawer full of fucking thumb drives?
No.
Or are
no,
you thinking
no.
that they would actually make them look kind of like actual cartridges again?
Kind of like actual cartridges, like you'd have the plastic casing, and then the guts of it would be a flash drive or a thumb drive. Well, you know, a industrial level one with huge amounts of data space on it.
Right.
But the guts of this, I'm envisioning something that I guess, and maybe this is wishful thinking, but I'm envisioning something kind of along the lines of, say, a SNES or a Sega Genesis.
Right.
A cartridge, only the guts of it would be a flash drive. And when you put the cartridge into the system, it's the flash drive that's going into the machine that's being accessed.
Taking all of this into consideration, I don't see where that would be outside of the realm of possibility. You probably would be looking at something more along the lines of a Sega Genesis cartridge, which were a good bit smaller than their SNES counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a thing. It could happen. I don't know, like, I'm of two minds about this. I'm almost wondering if, cause, you know, you've seen kind of the push to the always connected shit with Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
There was a huge backlash from the gaming community because of that, that caused them to kinda, do a 180, not quite a 360, on that. But I kind of wonder, you know, if the mentality, by the time the next console generation arrives, mm-hmm. 10 years from now.
Yeah, this is, although Nintendo did say that they were working on something called the NX.
Right, and but you also gotta keep in mind, A, Nintendo does what Nintendo wants. B, as a result of A, their console launch alignments have always been a bit off from everybody else's. Like, you know, you've seen the Xbox One and the PS4 within, you know, weeks of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And Nintendo had, you know, the Wii U technically for them is that generation of system. You know, when it came out, it was technically the first next gen system, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. I was kind of looking at it. That, as we've discussed, Nintendo is in a financial position where they don't have to play by anyone's rules.
And they are very much self-aware of this.
But that could be a situation, right, where they go, alright, you know, we're not beholden to the way that Sony and Microsoft are doing things. Let's go all out. Let's develop, you know, on our terms. We don't have to meet Sony and Microsoft's release schedules. If we have, you know, the makings of a console to succeed the Wii U, you know, further along, then we shouldn't have to wait until Sony and Microsoft are ready to release theirs.
Right, and well, the other thing with that is, with Nintendo, like, the Wii U, let's face it, It is, you could even debate whether or not it's better technologically than the PS3. Like, I mean, my own feelings about the system aside, and when you were down here chilling out with me, you developed a bit of an affinity for it as well.
Yeah, it's solid.
But I mean, just being honest about it, you know, it's probably on par with the PS3 in terms of overall capability. I don't think it's definitely not on par with, you know, the PS4 and the Xbone. So Nintendo kind of now, they kind of have to keep this wonky console release schedule. And, you know, they say that they release the next gen of console before everyone else, when in reality it's they release it later than everyone else, and it's kind of like a generation 0.5 of whatever generation they're currently in.
Well, speaking of retro games, I mean, let's talk about the Genesis for a while, because this kind of could relate to all of this. In the Genesis, you know, in the case of the Genesis, you had the 32X, right?
Right.
Which was their add-on to have a 32-bit. It was basically a way to play 32-bit games on the 16-bit Genesis.
Yes.
And the original,
in theory.
In theory. But the plan was originally that it was going to be released as a completely separate standalone system called the Neptune, and it would bridge the gap between Genesis and Saturn, right?
Right.
And maybe that's what this Nintendo NX, if that's even what the final name's going to be. I doubt it would be, considering that the GameCube was at one point called the Dolphin.
Well, then again, look at the Wii U.
Yeah, true, but still, if that's how they play it, I'm saying that Nintendo might say, hey, we have decided we're going to have the next 0.5 of a generation ready. So we're going to put that out, and whatever Sony and Microsoft do, Sony and Microsoft do, but, you know, we don't have to play by their rules.
Right, and now, are you saying that they might release this NX as an add-on to the Wii U?
No. I'm saying it might be what Sega originally intended
the
32X to be in the form of the Neptune, a stopgap system between the current generation and the next.
Right, I get you. I think that's also kind of part of Nintendo's problem. Mm. Because if you look at Microsoft and Sony, they're releasing a new platform every 10 years, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo goes about 5. And I think that's kind of hurting them.
Well, I mean, again, let's be brutally honest. In the last 3 generations, dating back to the PS2, Xbox, original Xbox and GameCube generations, Nintendo has been far behind. The GameCube was inferior to both the original Xbox and the PS2. The Wii was inferior to both the PS3 and the 360 and the Xbox 360, and the Wii U is inferior to the Xbox One and the PS4.
Right. Yeah, the Nintendo systems are held up solely by Nintendo's properties. I mean, their first-party titles are solely what holds up their systems
these days.
At least in the home console market. Now, handheld, that's a different story altogether.
Well, we could talk about, you know, for days almost, everyone's sad attempts to challenge Nintendo in the handheld department.
Right.
But, you know, what I'm saying is, I don't know, because Nintendo's got so much money, I almost think that they're so keenly aware of it that they kind of have the attitude of, you know, we're not going to emphasize technology if that's not what we want to do. We have a certain vision for our console. Or we have a certain vision, an artistic vision almost for what we want to do. And it might not be this, and it may not be state of the line. Or state of the art, right? And so it's one of those things where, because, you know, Nintendo as a company has more money than Sony as a company. Not just the video game section of Sony, Sony as a company.
Right.
Nintendo might be, you know, we have the luxury to do whatever we want to do.
Right.
And so, I don't know. That, those are just my thoughts on the matter. Point is, kind of circling back around, and maybe, again, this is all wishful thinking, because I've been on a retro gaming kick lately, actually. But,
you're welcome.
Indeed. But I've been on, but this retro game kick, I've been thinking, and, you know, that kind of just, got me thinking, and I searched around, you know, future of cartridges, and it turned out that I wasn't as, you know, I wasn't being as nostalgic as I thought I was, and that there are serious theories being thrown around to the viability of, cartridges in the modern, you know, in the next generation, whatever that next generation is, whatever form that next generation takes.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, I wouldn't, I don't know. It depends on a lot of different variables. I see it going one of two ways. I see either going towards something like the flash drive, unless they come up with some new disk medium that's, you know, higher mm-hmm. capacity than what we've got now. Mm-hmm. But you know, Blu-ray, even though that's kind of like the new video medium, it's been much slower to be adopted than say DVD was.
Because
to a lot of people, you know, we just switched, you know, to fucking DVDs for a lot of people. And, you know,
Blu-rays came out.
Right. And then, you know, a couple years later you get fucking Blu-rays and it's like, all right, well, what the fuck is this? You know, I just got, you know, I just rebought everything I had on VHS on fucking DVD. Now you want me to do this too? Fuck you.
Exactly. That's what happened with me. I finally had my DVD collection to what my VHS collection was. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, hey, buy Blu-ray. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Fuck you.
But I don't know. We usually see these things before, you know, in the home video market before we see them in the video game market. I think if they had something else beyond Blu-ray / HD DVD, we would have seen it by now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying, you know, in 10 years from now, I mean, anything's possible, which is what we'd be looking at for the next gen from, you know, Microsoft and Sony. But, you know, for the next consoles, I see them doing one of two things. Either, yes, going to a flash drive-based format, or going to strictly cloud-based, which I don't want to see happen at all. But I think it's possible.
I don't see that happening either. I mean, I think we like to joke that we're in a minority, and maybe we still are, but I still think that a lot of people would rather have physical media if the option were there.
I do prefer to have physical media, but at the same time, I mean, you know, like we've talked about with Steam, you know, it does have its advantages in the sense that it enables prices to be a lot lower in some cases.
It does, it allows prices to be lower, and it does increase the access to available, you know, it makes more titles available. But I don't ever see gamers forsaking cartridges, or cartridges or discs or whatever form physical media takes. I don't see a cloud only system being a thing. For one thing, I mean, once you do that, you might as well just sign the death warrants of every video game chain store out there.
Well, and you're already seeing that with GameStop. I mean, they've actually started selling cartridges again. You know, fucking retro games like NES, SNES, Genesis. Mm-hmm. And they're selling them at fucking eBay prices. But they're selling them. So, you know, it's... And I think that
that's
you
something
are...
I haven't really seen, honestly, up here. I was just in an EB Games. Yes, we still call it EB up here. I was just in an EB Games earlier today, and they weren't selling old cartridges. The only places selling old stuff, you know, vintage cartridges that I've been able to find here are, well, independent used gaming stores, and that's not what I'm talking about. If anything, I think, you know, retro gaming stores would be thrilled if the next generation was entirely cloud-based.
Well, the thing is,
because I think that would be a boon to their business, but I'm just saying I don't, like, Electronic Boutique / GameStop, for instance, they're gonna go out of business. They would go out of business.
I think they're already heading there personally. I mean, but let me look at what happened in the home video market. You know, you had Netflix come out.
Mm-hmm. And it killed Blockbuster.
Right. You know, and pretty much killed all video rental stores for the most part. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see the same thing happening again. Mm-hmm. With the video game industry. All it would take would be, you know, something like a video game version of Netflix, a paid subscription service where you just, and Sony already has, you know, there's already things kind of like that, like with PlayStation Plus and shit like that.
Well, there's PlayStation Plus, there's Xbox Live, and then there's the virtual console.
Right.
Which is primarily used to sell retro games, but it needs to be stated that the template is already there.
Right.
Right. To expand that into, you know, if they wanted to go completely cloud-based, the technology is there.
Yeah.
I guess is my point
and
on that front.
I don't know. I almost see probably somewhere down the middle. Like, you will most likely see some kind of flash drive-based platform. But you also see, conversely, a much less stringent reliance upon physical media. And, you know, in most cases, that's already what's happening. You know, like on the PlayStation Store, you can download most new releases on release night.
You can, but I'm curious to see the numbers on those downloads versus how many people still go to the store to buy the physical copy.
I don't know. And, you know, I would order more, like, newer games off of the virtual console. But Nintendo, in their infinite wisdom, only gives you a 32 gig hard drive. So, like, when I was gonna buy Bayonetta 2, I'm like, alright, you know, maybe I'll just check on the virtual console, cause I really don't feel like being arsed to fucking go out to Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking on there, and like, alright, you know, they have it. It's like 17 gig download. What the fuck? My hard drive's only 32, you fucking idiots! You know, what the hell, Nintendo? Seriously? Whereas, you know, my PS3 has, you know, fucking 500 gig hard drive.
Well, so. That's weird. I'm not sure about the storage capacity on the DS necessarily.
It is, well, the DS systems use micro SD cards.
Yes.
On my 3DS, it is, it comes with this standard default 4 gig.
Yeah, and the reason I bring that up is because, well, just saying, I've been kind of splurging on the virtual console through my DS, and I've been able to download a fair amount of games.
Right, and well, for one thing, you're also downloading mostly retro titles, right?
Mostly, yes.
Right, and the thing is, like, okay, you see, when you were down here a couple weeks ago, you know, you can have pretty much every NES game, SNES game known to man on a hard drive, and it only takes up about 2 gigs
mm-hmm.
on a fucking hard drive for a PC. So you could pretty much download, you know, those old titles on your 3DS in perpetuity, and you're not going to have a storage issue.
I just might do every one ever made.
You will do all of the things!
Even the shitty ones!
Ooh, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde on the virtual console. Make us so number one.
I don't know. They'd have to get Toho's permission, but I'm sure if you were to actually ask Toho, they'd be like, holy shit. We'd forgotten that was a thing that we did.
We're sorry. We're so sorry. We're so fucking sorry. My God. What have we done?
Yeah,
Now, like I told you last night when we were discussing this,
mm-hmm.
what I would actually love to see happen,
mm-hmm.
it won't happen,
mm-hmm.
but I would love to see it happen, and Nintendo would be like, oh my God, if they actually did it.
If they did this, Nintendo would just roll, and like, they don't, It's not like they need more money, but they right. just get even more.
Yeah, I mean, they thought the original Wii printed fucking money? Shit. Bring out a console, have a flash drive based, whatever they want to do. Flash drive based probably works just fine. Put in it, because this is the thing now for most, for like a lot of the retro gamers, because these systems are becoming more expensive because they're being sought after by collectors and so on and so forth. So they're turning to, you know, like the Retron systems, the Retron 3, the Retron 5, mm-hmm. This new one that they've got coming out that plays all of the goddamn things. Literally, like everything, pretty much, except like Game Gear.
Aww.
Well, yeah, and I'm not saying that as a dig at you, because earlier you're like, I think I might get a Game Gear. I'm like, LOL, what?
I'm just saying it's such an odd, like, I didn't even have a Game Gear when it came out. I had a Game Boy. Like, nobody, well, I didn't have a Game Gear. None of my friends had a Game Gear. Like, it was, which was, I think, the problem.
Right, yeah. And that was the thing. Like, okay, the Game Gear was awesome because it was, like, the first, you know, color handheld, right?
And it still failed spectacularly against black and white Game Boy.
Right, well, because, okay, A, the library of games that were on it was pretty mediocre. Mm-hmm. B, fuck, the battery life on that thing was horrible. Like, I forget exactly what it was, but it was a fraction of what you'd get with the Game Boy, like less than half of what you'd get on a Game Boy. Mm-hmm. And it was way more expensive. It was like twice the cost of a Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people just, you know, you could get a Game Boy back in the day for like $80, $90.
Mm-hmm.
I think was what my mom paid for mine when I got one as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you know, whereas the Game Gear was like $199 or some shit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of people just weren't willing to pay that for such an abysmal library of games. But the flip side now is if you do want to get a Game Gear,
they're fucking cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they run like $30 or something.
Oh, it's like, who in their right mind is gonna charge a lot of money for a Game Gear? I mean, come on. But that aside, your plan, what you suggested was for Nintendo to release a console that was, you know, say flash drive based, and then included ports to play NES and SNES and N64 cartridges.
NES, SNES, N64, GBA, as well as the original Game Boy. And if they did that, my God. Of course, the only problem with that would be that it would increase demand for cartridges.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I could see them just not doing it because they would realize that, okay, well, to do this, I mean, the cartridge prices are already high enough. In some cases, I mean, you know, I paid as much for my copy of Contra as I did for the new one back in the day almost. I paid like mm-hmm. $40 for my used one. Whereas, you know, back in the day it was like 50. So, shit, son, you know?
On the other side, though, hypothetically, if they were to do something like that, if they were to do this mega system, I guess, then couldn't they do something where they go, okay, we're going to release a system, and as part of that, we're going to re-release maybe a select number of original, of SNES, N64, NES title cartridges. Re-release some of these older cartridges, still in cartridge form, but, you know, re-releases so that people don't have to rely on the aftermarket.
They could. I mean, it'd be a cost-benefit analysis, really. I mean, yeah, Nintendo has no problems taking a financial loss on something risky. But they try not to be stupid about it. Mm-hmm. And it would come at the cost of them, you know, it would come at the cost of hurting sales on the virtual console into things where they have almost no overhead.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be basically creating overhead to produce physical media mm-hmm. to give customers, you know, tangible copies of things that they already quote unquote own. On the virtual console.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other downside, you know, me saying quote unquote own. That's the thing that a lot of gamers of like our generation, you know, that's one of our big complaints. Like so many of our games, we don't own anymore. quote unquote. Like, I mean, you buy a game on Steam, right? But, I mean, it's there as long as Steam's there.
Yeah.
You know, Valve fucking goes under tomorrow because, you know, they finally released Half-Life 3 and it was hot garbage. then what do, right? Where are you? You're sitting there like, okay, bye-bye $500 I spent on Steam games. And that's a low figure. I mean, that's probably about what I've spent myself. That's not counting, you know, the people that have spent thousands and thousands and thousands. You know, who have like, you know, Steam libraries of 500-600 games or more.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. Like, do we really own these titles? You know, and a lot of people say, well, you know, Valve went under, you know, they would make it to where you could download, you know, hard copy or copies onto your hard drive and all this other shit. Okay. Well, I don't have enough room on my hard drive for every game I've got on Steam. And that's, you know, one of the things. I'll uninstall a game when I'm done playing it sometimes, you know, or done playing it for a while. Mm-hmm. And then a few months later, when I get the urge to play it again, I'll download it and reinstall it and play it again. So, you know, that's, and yeah, they could, you know, let you download a copy for physical backup or whatever, I guess. But I mean, you get my underlying point. We're kind of getting out of actually being able to own our video games in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of the pull for people like you and I and our generations of gamers where, you know, we want to own our fucking games. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I guess some might see me as just, you know, making something bigger out of this than what there really is, but it is a legitimate concern just based on the trend itself. The more predominant cloud storage and all this other shit becomes, the less control and ownership we have over what we pay money for. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we play games like World of Warcraft. That, I mean, you know, when the WoW servers finally shut down, what do we have?
After Chris Metzen's coke habit finally gets the better of him.
Right, and with teary eyes, you know, he powers off his PC after deleting all of his fucking thrall porn.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when World of Warcraft is done, you know, what have we got left? Okay, well, thanks for the memories, guys.
You know, they've pretty much committed to, we'll keep WoW going forever.
Forever, asterisk, until it no longer turns a profit.
Mm-hmm.
Or even for, they'll keep it going even after it stops turning a profit, but, because they'll try to fix it, of course. But, you know, I think that day is probably coming within the next, I'd say 7 years. I think WoW's probably got about 5 to 7 years left in it. But anyways, I think we've gone off the reservation enough on this probably. We appreciate both of you listeners for, bearing with us. There was a picture that you showed me today, sir.
Yes, so, new Suicide Squad pictures have been released or leaked. I don't even make a difference. I don't even, you know, really recognize the difference between them anymore. New Suicide pictures of the Joker. Jack, I'll let you take it away.
He looks like he's going to a fucking children's party. He looks like some kind of fucking cheap knockoff, drunken hobo Joker who's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to pick up some scratch on the side doing birthday parties for kids who want a fucking Batman theme.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, I get they're going for like the old style comic book look maybe. Alright.
I wouldn't even say that they're really going for that though. I mean, he looks kind of deranged. Like, he doesn't look traditionally comic book style.
Nicholson looked deranged. Ledger looked fucking psychotic. This guy looks like he's going to a fucking 10-year-old's birthday party.
Jared Leto, by the way, is the actor in question, playing the Joker in the Suicide Squad movie. I don't know. To me, he kind of looked... The sense I get from this picture is that it's the Joker if the Joker were a strung-out druggie.
I get it. I mean,
I'm getting kind of a Sex Pistols vibe from him.
Well, that should tell you everything you need to fucking know right there. I mean, come on.
Aww.
Oh, you don't like them either. They've got like one song that I like, but anyways. You know, I don't know. And, you know, the makeup, of course, doesn't make or break the performance that comes from it, but it is that first impression that you get when you're setting foot in the door.
It is, but a lot of people freaked out when they first saw Heath Ledger as the Joker, and those people quickly shut up once they saw the movie. So my contention is, let's wait until we see let's wait until we actually see the Suicide Squad movie.
No, you don't know me. And for the record, I didn't freak out when I seen Ledger as the Joker. I'm like, okay, well, that's the next logical progression. And based on the tone of the previous movie, then it makes perfect sense. I get it. With this one, it's like, and maybe it would have helped if the picture that was quote unquote leaked or whatever, maybe if it was from a better angle. Because he looks like a total tard bucket. But I don't know.
I think he's got kind of a strung out look to him. I think it works. Or at the very least, I'm willing to concede that it'll probably work out better once we once we actually see the movie. But I like it, if only because they're not trying to ape the Heath Ledger look. I know you think that his performance was overrated.
Yeah, and again, I'm not saying that it wasn't good, just that it was overrated.
But I guess my point is that a lot of people loved his depiction of the Joker.
Sheeple.
And to them, I think it would have seemed wrong to turn whatever the next iteration of the Joker was into a Heath Ledger clone.
Oh, sure, why not? In fact, let's just change his actual, like, name before he became the Joker to fucking Heath Ledger. Aw, well, too soon.
Well, I guess the whole thing is that, you know, when Ledger was sort of explaining, you know, before he passed, you know,
his... Well, I don't think he did it afterwards. Sorry, go on.
But when Ledger was explaining, you know, how he wanted to approach the role, he said that he thought it would be disrespectful to Jack Nicholson to just do a Jack Nicholson impression. And so I guess in that vein, Leto's take, you know, obviously we don't know from the character, we haven't seen it yet, but if the pictures are any indication, I think it's clear they're going in a different direction. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I because the Ledger performance was so it was so ingrained in a lot of people's minds following that movie.
So. I'm not saying it's a bad idea to go in a different direction. You know, I think it's probably a good idea, mostly because I don't know. Is one of the few who, I liked Ledger's performance as the Joker, but it's not what I would have wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get it. I don't know what they're going to go for with this. Your guess is as good as any with the whole strung out thing. But he looks more like, I don't know, like they're going back to the whole Cesar Romero thing, back from the old, you know, TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just too much in the opposite direction. I mean, if one end you have the which to me was just the overly dark and gritty Nolan movies in some cases, and then on the opposite end of the spectrum you have like the old TV show and the fucking Joel Schumacher movies.
See, I'm not getting a Cesar Romero vibe though. I'm getting something completely different.
I don't know, I'm judging by, like, the makeup, and, I mean, yeah, he does evidently have, like, a tattoo on his chest or what have you. But, I don't know, it's, I guess, maybe they're going for the strung out thing. Yeah, he's in, like, he's got, like, the leather jacket, I don't know. It's a thing.
So the question is, will you be seeing the Suicide Squad movie?
No. No, I don't see a point to it.
Well, I'll tell you,
I mean, I don't see a point to the movie. Like, it's not that I don't see a point to seeing it. I don't see a point to its existence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's cool that they're doing something different with it. But, okay, DC is one of those things where I like Batman, right?
Mm-hmm.
But outside, you know, in a vacuum, which is kind of like what this is, aside from the fact that the Joker's there, mm-hmm. I don't give a shit. Well, I really don't give a shit about pretty much anything DC does.
You know, it's got Harley Quinn.
Yeah, but that's nothing that Tumblr can't help me with.
Oh! but, I don't know. I like the idea of the Suicide Squad movie because, you know, via Harley Quinn and the Joker, they are going to, they're setting up the Joker without having to waste a Batman movie to set up the Joker, if that makes any sense.
Right, but isn't this like...
because if their plan is to do this new DC, if we're writing off the Nolan trilogy as just their own thing.
Which is a mistake if you ask me, but yeah.
I agree with you, but that seems to be what they're doing. If that's the plan, and if this new, Ben Affleck Batman, if that's gonna be the new Batman of the new DC, you know, cinematic universe.
God help us.
But if that's gonna be the direction they're gonna go in, then eventually you're gonna have to have a Batman versus the Joker movie. And this, and the Suicide Squad film allows them to establish Harley Quinn, allows them to establish the Joker, allows them to establish more elements of the Batman series without having to waste a full-blown Batman movie on it. Then when Batman finally does get the Joker, the movie-going audience will be like, okay, we're caught up to speed, let's just see them fight.
And, yeah, and that is a good thing, and that's something that's kind of... It's something we haven't really seen before in you know, comic book movie universe, because, well, there's really only one so far, mm-hmm. Where, you know, you don't end up being drugged through the origin stories that you already know. Like, if Superman, for example, I mean, how many fucking times, we get it.
How many times are they gonna rewrite your story?
Right, exactly. And, you know, and then of course with Batman, which this could be a good thing with, you know, well, now that you bring up that point, that could be one of the good points with, you know, Batman versus Superman. And yes, I know the title is Batman v Superman. They can suck my dick. I'm not saying that. We're not in a court of law. Thank you. But anyways. So, I mean, that could be one good thing about this movie, too, the Batman and Superman movie.
And that we're doing yet another Batman cinematic universe, but we don't have to
right.
establish Batman's backstory, which we all know.
Right, yeah. Can we just for once, you know, just be like, yeah, we know. You all know what fucking happened. Here's what you came here to see.
And that's what I think this allows them to do in that, you know, fans will go see the Suicide Squad movie, they'll get whatever background they need to get on the Joker, and then when you finally have Jared Leto's Joker versus Ben Affleck's Batman, we can just get right down to business.
Which
was, by the way, I thought the strongest part of The Dark Knight in that the Joker really didn't have an origin story. And I kind of liked that movie because it was almost like Christopher Nolan was poking fun at the idea that we have to have an origin story because he had the Joker lie in that film about his origins, like, what, three times?
Yeah.
So I thought that was brilliant. I thought Nolan had the right idea, and I think this is going to allow this new unified cinematic universe for DC to – do the same thing. We can get everything out of the way, and then we can just watch what we came to see.
Fair enough. I mean, the one thing that kind of gets me though is like, all right, so the Suicide Squad, from what you've told me, because I'm not with the comic book background, I'm always a little bit like, all right, if something out of left field like this thing comes out, I'm like, what the fuck is that? Mm-hmm. You know, they're basically like reformed criminals who are doing like the whole A-team thing now, basically.
Kinda, sorta, yeah.
And
it kind of like that. It's more of an anti-hero kind of thing, but yeah, that's pretty much it.
So that kind of has me thinking, all right, so then wouldn't that, if they're having their Joker be a quote-unquote good guy.
I don't think they are, though.
Oh, okay.
Harley Quinn is a member of Suicide Squad. Joker, not so much. Kind of, sort of, sometimes, but not really.
Okay.
So, but see, I think there's enough ambiguity that they could really do whatever they wanted. If they wanted to make the Joker a good guy, they could, but I don't, but they're certainly under no obligation to go that route.
Okay, I got you. That clears it up then. Alrighty then.
I mean, obviously it's gonna be a thing where we have to see, like, we won't know until we've seen the film, right? But.
Well, I will sit here and I will judge hard enough. Well, for both of us.
Well, you know, it's kind of like WoW, right? I mean, whenever they announce a class change in WoW, we could be patient and wait to see how the changes play.
Yeah, but I'm not a casual.
You know, but that's casual, and
right.
the proper mature response is to call the developmental team gay slurs on the internet until they give us what we want.
Right. I'm not going to waste energy doing that. I'm just going to sit here and judge really hard.
I mean, whatever, you know, whatever nerf you want to happen to someone else's class, just call Chris Metzen a faggot. He'll do it.
Well, you know, or hide a stash.
But speaking of WoW, in the lead up to E3, on our E3 show, we talked a bit about a developer Q&A session. They've released another one, actually. This time it is Corey Stockton. At the Twitter handle Mumper, and he's got he shared some of, you know, where the dev team's minds are at the moment,
up their own asses.
And so I thought, you know, since we did the last one, since we covered the last one, that maybe we should give this other dev Q&A sort of a look through. See, you know, pick it apart and be unfair and judgmental as we tend to be.
Well, okay, I'll start off with this. I'm going to skip a little bit ahead, and I'm going to call one thing out right now, or else it'll be just burning in my fucking throat.
Mm-hmm.
This jackass says that, okay, here's the quote, the synopsis as provided on MMO Champion, rather. Some expansions had four big patches, some had three. Warlords had two. Patch 6.1 and 6.2. Bullshit.
Yeah, no.
It had one. 6.1 was a joke. It had one content patch.
6.1 was a joke, and Blizzard seems to know it, as in the previous Q&A we covered, they more or less admitted that maybe calling 6.1 a major content patch was a mistake on our part.
Right. So, yeah. Lies. Shame.
Let's get right to it, then. It turns out I was wrong. I don't think I said it on the show, but in private conversation, Jack, I said that I expected there to be another raid after Hellfire Citadel, the Burning Crusade expansion.
Yep.
Where everyone thought that Black Temple would be the final raid, and then it turned out, hey, Sunwell!
And do you recall what I said when you said that?
No, I don't.
I told you that there wouldn't be, because they'll be putting effort on the next expansion.
And you were right.
As always.
Hellfire Citadel is currently planned to be the last raid of Warlords of Draenor. It wraps things up, and it's hard to beat Archimonde as the final boss. I just want to talk about Archimonde as the final boss in Hellfire Citadel for a moment, though, because it's bullshit! So, we're doing the Back to the Future thing this expansion, right? The Draenor we're on is Draenor of the past. It's Draenor 35 years ago, and it's alternate history, and whoop-de-doo! Anyway, it's all timey-wimey. Anyway, in the original timeline, Sargeras, the head of the Burning Legion, basically Space Satan, has two lieutenants. He's got Archimonde, and he's got Kil'jaeden. in the original timeline, Archimonde didn't give two shits about Draenor. Sargeras didn't give two shits about Draenor. The only person who gave a shit about Draenor was Kil'jaeden, because Kil'jaeden was pissed off that Valen told him to go fuck himself a million years prior to that. And so... the whole, you know, the whole Legion interfering on Draenor, the Legion getting the orcs to drink the demon blood, all of that was Kil'jaeden. No one else in the Legion gave a shit, but it was all Kil'jaeden's initiative. So, alternate timeline, which, as far as we know, is more or less unaltered up until the point of divergence, that being,
Garrosh. Yeah.
Garrosh going back in time and changing things. But despite that, in the new timeline that they've created, they're not using Kil'jaeden as the final boss, even though, you know, in terms of the lore, that makes the most sense. It will instead be Archimonde, which kind of goes against the established timeline, because again, Archimonde doesn't give two shits about Draenor. So, why are they using Archimonde? They're using Archimonde because when they last used Kil'jaeden as a boss in an expansion, when he was the final boss for Sunwell at the end of BC, he was emerging from the actual Sunwell, so they only had to create his upper half, right?
Right.
Since then, they've never gotten around to creating a full model of Kil'jaeden. So, because they didn't have a full model of Kil'jaeden, but they did have a full model of Archimonde for that Caverns of Time dungeon where you kill him on the tree.
I know. No.
Kill him on the tree, yes.
Yes.
Yes, no, we're just a bunch of scrub lords.
We're on a fucking on-rails Disney ride of a raid just to see him taken out by a bunch of fucking wisps. Yeah. Fuck it.
So, but anyway.
That raid sucked.
It did, so bad. But because they had the Archimonde model, that's why Archimonde's the boss. Even though it makes sense to make Kil'jaeden the boss, he's not the boss, because Blizzard is fucking lazy and couldn't be arsed to render a full Kil'jaeden model.
And the funny thing is, the last time we spoke about this, right, was right about the time Draenor was launching.
It's when Draenor was launching, and people data mined the files to show that Archimonde, not Kil'jaeden, would play a big role.
And so it's been since November of last year when Draenor launched. We're already at the end of its expansion cycle, which is either a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how you want to look at it. But they didn't take this time, this, you know, 3/4 of a year since this goddamn game launched to fucking make a Kil'jaeden?
No, see, they were going to, they wanted to go on holiday vacation early, so they just farted out 6.1 instead.
Right, yeah, so we got selfie pics, we've got Twitter integration. We've got naval combat now, but I don't really care anymore. So, I've got better things to fill that need for. Yes, sweet World of Warship. Anyways, yes.
So that is my Archimonde rant. He shouldn't be there.
No, he fucking shouldn't, but they had to go make a grilled cheese. And so, fucking Archimonde it is, because we can't fucking give Kil'jaeden legs and a dick, which he's probably more upset about than we are.
And how hard could it possibly be? Because Kil'jaeden actually is a Draenei. He's from the Draenei race. He's a corrupted Draenei. You already have the Draenei model!
Look,
take the bottom half of a Draenei, right, color it red, and stick it onto the bottom of the half Kil'jaeden model.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, now, we don't know anything about graphics or animation. Mm. You know, we'll be the first ones to admit that, but at the same time, yeah. I mean, why can't you just, at the very least, copy? Even if it's not as simple as, well, you can't just copy and paste onto one another. I mean, surely you could, like, you know, when you're making, like, the wire models and shit in the pre-rendering stages, you know, surely you could just take that data from that lower half below the waist, change the color value or whatever to
to
fucking red. And, you know, boom, you got fucking Arcimonde. Now, granted, killed Jaden, yeah. Now, sure, you know, we had the newer models for Draenor, which to date, I think, is the best thing to come out of this expansion.
I don't know, I kind of like garrisons.
Garrisons are good, you know. The thing is, like, Draenor
itself. I don't have to interact with anyone.
Right. We don't want to bring out player housing because then people won't want to interact with anyone. 6 years later, I'm interacting with no one. This is awesome.
I specifically designed my garrison so I wouldn't have to interact with anyone.
Because your heart is filled with hatred and spite.
I don't want to stand next to you at the auction house. I'll build my own.
No, the whole reason, okay, for our devoted, loyal couple of listeners out there, so the whole reason Mike has geared his entire garrison around not having to go to the faction capital, which in this expansion is Ashran, which is just a glorified PvP hub, it is because it had originally going to be the Black Temple.
The Temple of Caribor.
Right, the Temple of Caribor, a.k.a. the Black Temple from the Burning Crusade expansion pack. So then, you know, we had been told, well, you know, that's going to be the Alliance capital in Draenor, and we're all, you know, jerking our cocks, and this is going to be great, right? Then, you know, a few weeks before release, Blizzard's like, yeah, we're going to go ahead and not do that. We don't want to fill that temple with stuff. It'd be big, and people would get lost. Have you ever seen Orgrimmar? Have you ever seen Orgrimmar, Blizzard?
Have you ever seen Thunderbluff?
Yeah, have you ever seen fucking Thunderbluff? Yeah, have you ever seen fucking Thunderbluff? I mean, come the fuck
off. If you go to the Temple of Caribor, they're like, Caribor will still be there, you can still see stuff. No, you can't, because the temple itself is actually closed, because they didn't want to be arsed to put shit in it. That's why they moved the capital.
Right. And so then, okay, so now we've got Ashran, and it's basically copied and pasted assets for a level 3 garrison, with just a couple of extra buildings thrown in there for good measure, and some more vendors, of course. That's really all it is. And so Mike here, he's like, you know what? Fuck you people. I am not going to your little joke of a city. Fuck you. I'll make my own.
So I went with the storehouse and, trading post buildings in my garrison, which gave me a bank in my garrison and an auction house in my garrison, which means I never have to go to Ashran. So fuck all of you.
Yeah. So
I spec'd into spite.
Yeah. So yeah, there's not going to be another patch in the expansion, evidently. Of course, now they do kind of leave themselves some wiggling room. They said, you know, they didn't have anything to announce about future patches, but they are looking to see at what rate the content is consumed. That coupled with the fact that they mentioned that Arcimonde was a difficult boss, has me thinking that they might, if anything, they may have overtuned him.
As far as I'm concerned, and this is just going off of what I've seen since then, they're never going to top Arthas in terms of difficulty, just because since Arthas, what have we had for final bosses? We've had Deathwing, where he sort of just gives up on life halfway through the fight and puts his head down as we whack it. Then we had, Garrosh, who, you know, had a lot of interesting mechanics, but it was really something that once you got the feel of how it worked, it was actually pretty easy.
Yeah.
And then, so, you know, it was still a huge improvement over Deathwing, but I'm just saying, yeah, Arcimonde will be difficult. I'm sure he's going to be difficult. He's the final boss of an expansion. He's not going to be easy. But at the same time, Arthas had so much shit you had to keep an eye on that, you know what? If you were able to master the Arthas fight, I don't think anything they throw at you is going to be too difficult.
True. Arthas so far, you know, I've seen expansion. I thought personally that Pandaria was constructed better overall than Wrath of the Lich King was, but in terms of overall end boss quality, yeah, Arthas is still my favorite.
Arthas had so much going on. He had the plague that you had. He spread the plague that you had to keep an eye on. You had to make sure that you didn't infect other people. So you had to make sure that you weren't, you know, making things worse for your teammates. And then on top of all of that, you had like undead zombies and ghosts that he was summoning that you had to kill. And then he'd call his Valkyrie bitches just to throw you off for shits and giggles.
Really, right? Really hateful. Really hateful.
It was a hateful boss, but I mean, it was, but I'm just saying, since then, they really haven't topped that. And so Archimonde, yeah, he'll be hard, but he's not gonna be Arthas hard, cause I don't think you can be, you can't make a boss Arthas hard intentionally. If you try, you're just gonna end up making it literally impossible.
Well, in any event, so they said that they're more or less gonna keep an eye at the rate that the content is consumed. And see, you know, if they need to throw in some more content. Now, here's the thing that kind of gets me, though. Later on, they go back to say that they count Garrison followers as content.
That is a cheap fuck. No.
Yeah, did you see that, though?
No, I missed that.
Yeah, it's under Garrisons, and it says, and I quote from the paraphrasing on MMO Champion, similar to battle pets, followers don't need more levels. Followers are content themselves. So more content is added by adding more followers and missions rather than requiring more upgrades. Now, they could have just meant this in the context of content for garrisons.
Bad devs.
Yeah, they could have just meant it in that context. If that's the only thing that they meant by it, then okay, fine. But if they mean that they count that as actual game content, yeah, bad guess.
Hey, sorry 6.1 sucked, but we add Captain Fizzerfop the gnome as a follower.
yeah, exactly. they do go on to say overall that the team is happy with garrisons.
I am too. I like garrisons. I'd say it's the biggest success of the expansion.
It says that there were things they would have done differently. Well, of course. They say that they do plan to integrate the parts of the garrison systems that they thought that worked well into future, you know, expansions and see what comes of it there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like hearing that. I think that all in all, the garrisons were done well. You know, my jokes about my self-imposed isolation notwithstanding. Garrisons were fun. I think the follower system could be tuned to make it maybe a bit more interactive, because right now it's almost like your followers are stats, and you really don't interact all that much. You're just like, oh, hey, you have good stats for this mission. Go on it and bring me things. So I think there could be ways to make the player-follower dynamic a bit more interesting, just so you have a bit more customization, maybe. Obviously, they don't want you renaming or coloring or anything, you know, substantial on followers, but just make it a bit more interactive, I think, would be a good step in the right direction. I know that's vague, but that's really what's coming to mind when I'm trying to think this through.
My thoughts have been, I like the garrisons on the whole, but I think they need to remove followers altogether.
Really?
Yeah. To me, and I'll tell you why. The gameplay, quote unquote, gameplay behind it, it reeks of mobile game free to play material. It's lazy.
I think, honestly, their follower, I think the point of the followers were, they were trying to capture, with the followers and the garrisons, they were trying to capture kind of that old RTS feel from the original Warcraft games.
I'm going to be very cynical, and I'm going to say it's nothing more than a retention mechanic.
You think so?
Well, based on the fact that it's, you know, well, come back in this amount of time, 10 hours from now, 8 hours from now, whatever, and collect the rewards and send the followers back out. And that right there, that is identical to every, you know, microtransaction-riddled free-to-play game out there on the market for mobile devices. Mm-hmm. And I don't like this type of gameplay, and I'm still, again, using that term very loosely.
But again, though, is it even necessarily bad if they do it. I mean, at the end of the day, if you don't like the followers, you don't have to engage with them.
And that is one way of putting it, yes. And I don't disagree, except for the fact that the time that they're putting... I'm not saying it's costing us a raid tier, but it's evidently costing Kill Jaden his fucking legs. And,
we could have given Kill Jaden legs, but Captain Fizzlefop follower needed to be added into the game.
Right, exactly, you know. And I would like to see the resources that are being put on this follower mechanic that I don't really... I mean, it is kind of fun. It does have its good points. I just don't think World of Warcraft is the place for this kind of thing. Like, if they release...
It seems as if they've been taking World of Warcraft... I mean, it started off as an MMORPG, right? And that's still what it is at its base. But I think... that they have done everything that they can to make WoW every kind of game possible. I mean, you've got you've got the garrisons and the followers, are very RTS oriented. You've got battle pets, which is basically a stripped down version of Pokemon. There was that one vulture. No, not vulture jousting, hippogriff jousting.
Oh,
game.
Right.
Mini game that was, as you said, it was almost a carbon copy of an old video game.
It was basically a 3D modern version of the old arcade game Joust.
So I think in Blizzard's mind, it's like if you tell them, "Hey, I don't think followers are a feature." That I don't think WoW was the game to have followers as a feature. They probably see that as a good thing. Like, oh. We want to make WoW everything. WoW can be an MMO, but if you want to do followers, you can do that. Or if you want to do, like, the fucking Brawlers Guild, you can do nothing but that. Like, they want WoW to be every game until it's consumed every other game.
And that's fine, but yet it's not. They're failing in that because they lost 3 million subscribers in 3 months.
I don't think followers were the reason they lost 3 million.
I'm not saying that they are. I'm not even insinuating that. I'm insinuating that, and I'm coming right out and saying that it's not help, that aim, that goal is not keeping them subscribers. It's not helping.
I'm gonna go.
And to the contrary, it may be pushing some of them off, but at the very least it's not helping.
I'm going to go ahead and say that I think the reason they lost 3 million subscribers is because 6.1 was a wet fart of a patch.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, of course, yes.
Hypothetically, let's assume that back when we got 6.1, we got everything that we're getting in 6.2, and that was 6.1. And then there was something later that was going to be 6.2. I don't think they lose those 3 million at all. I think the new content comes out, the 10 million that were digging the game at launch continue playing. But what happened was everyone dug the game at launch, everyone consumed all the content that was at launch, and they were like, okay, what's next? And Blizzard was like, selfies and Twitter integration. And people left.
Yeah, and that is part of it. I think also the abysmal launch of the game hurt too, because people didn't like it at launch because they couldn't play it. It was like, you know, again, you and I had no issue with it, but seemingly almost everybody else did. And, you know, for about a week to 2 weeks there, it was almost unplayable for a lot of people. So that hurt it very badly as well. So I think it was between that and 6.1 that caused a subscriber loss. My point wasn't that, you know, these weird things that they're doing with the game is causing people to go away. I don't have anything to prove that. But it's not keeping them in either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, then let's get rid of the stupid shit. Let's get rid of the fucking free-to-play minigame that should be ported out to a fucking iPhone. And
well, I think the reason
give
why
Kill Jaden some goddamn legs.
I think the reason why they have all of this stuff, I think it's something that they've been struggling with since Kata. And that is, you know, downtime. Because every person who's played WoW has been there where they're logged in, but they're doing jack shit, except flying their mount around Stormwind for 2 hours.
And you know what? We're fine with that.
But I think in Blizzard's mind, I mean, Blizzard, I mean, say what, you could say many things about Blizzard, but they're not unobservant. They are, to various degrees, in touch with their player base. So they see that, and they're like, oh, obviously people like being in the game, or else they wouldn't be logged in flying around Stormwind for 2 hours. So they obviously like to be in the game, but they're not doing anything. Well, let's give them stuff to do. So, hey, if you like managing followers, here's that system. If you like to play Pokemon, here's that system. And I agree with you. Ideally, we would be able to have a situation where they could both give Kil'jaeden legs and make a functional minigame for people who enjoy them. Problem, and in a lot of ways, you'd think expanding their developer base by 40% would have allowed them the opportunity to do that. Apparently, that has actually had negative consequences.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, that's just sort of like. That's what's so frustrating. You look at everything they've done, you know, oh, we increased our workforce by 40%. Great. That means you should be able to work on the basics of the game and do these mini tasks and work on these little mini game projects.
Well, no, because they hired people who'd never seen a computer before and so they had to train them.
And so instead of working on the next expansion, they had to be like, and this is how you use Microsoft Word.
Yeah. I know to a degree I'm being too critical here, maybe a bit too harsh, cynical, whatever. But, you know, at this point, they're just doing so many things with the game that I'm, like the actual core of the game I like, but there's too little of it now. Mm-hmm. It's being almost swallowed up by all these little frilly things on the outer edges of it. I'm not trying to sound like a hardcore elitist vanilla loving jackass. I'm just saying, you know, look.
Why don't you just put your character down to level 60 and join a vanilla-only guild?
Right. But then I'd lose some of the transmog stuff that I liked, or else I'd be tainted by the impure content. So
No. You should join it, but insist on keeping every, like, all the post-vanilla transmog stuff.
Yes. My clothes are from the future. Make a character named Marty McFly and fucking put him in a vanilla guild.
But have him wear, like, Lich King era armor.
Yeah, from the future. Quick, you gotta help these people fall in love or else I'll never be born. Everybody just turns around looking at you like, what the fuck?
Well, no, we saw an interesting sight. Some guy in a vanilla-only guild, his tune was level 60 and everything, but he had a... He had a tabard that hadn't been released until Wrath of the Lich King on.
His tabard's from the future.
I liked your idea. We should have tracked down his guildmaster and informed him that someone in his guild of video game Amish
were
breaking the covenant.
But anyway, so that's in this big list of things here that they've gone over. Was there anything here that we haven't talked about that you feel like we should cover?
Just they said the WoW token has worked out well, which tells me that they're about to, that they're almost to the point where they're just saying, you give us cash, we'll give you gold, and we'll dispense with this, WoW token intermediary that we've gone with. It'll just be like, you give us $20, we'll give you 20,000 gold.
Yeah, and...
And other than that, they also said they wanted to do stuff with Gul'dan in the future. I don't know if you saw it, Jack, but the video... For after you defeat Archimonde, that was leaked. And Gul'dan looks like he's dead, but he's not going to die.
I'll get you next time, Prime. Next time!
Well, even in that video, Khadgar's like... Gul'dan is not so easily defeated. And then here's the WoW devs being like, we'd like to do more stuff with Gul'dan in the future. Which makes it all the more stupid that we didn't murder him at the launch of Warlords of Draenor and we had the chance.
Right.
I mean, the problem was Gul'dan's being used as a power battery to power the Dark Portal. And Khadgar's like, I don't like it, but you have to free him. No, I could kill him.
Right, if we killed him, wouldn't that just have the same effect?
Plus, you know, he's dead.
Right, exactly.
No. We have to let Wow Blofeld live to fight another day, because, of course.
But anyways, pretty much like what I said either last week or week before, whenever it was, basically my thoughts on World of Warcraft at the moment are, show me November.
Well, everything from this Q&A, where they heavily hint we've been working on the next expansion,
right,
says that I think... I'll go out and make a prediction. I think your best-case scenario plays out. I think at BlizzCon in November, they go, here's the next expansion. Alpha starts now.
That would be great, you know.
I think we'll see that.
Though, keep in mind, you know, we were, both of us had our own optimistic predictions for last BlizzCon, and look what we got.
Yeah, but we can't, but deep down, I think we knew that in terms of World of Warcraft, there wasn't going to be much anyway, because it was one of those kind of in-between years.
Right, I mean, okay, now this being the off year, so to speak, we know that there will be an expansion reveal. That's not the question. The question is, okay,
when will it be ready?
Right, when will it be ready? How much will they have done? How much are they going to have to present to us? Based on what I see of that, will be, okay, well, so we can, you know, they've got their shit together, more or less.
And I think that's what we'll see, honestly. They made, another effort in this Q&A to say that they don't like, year-long wait times between expansions. I mean, between a final content patch and the next expansion.
Right.
So the fact that, like, okay. My thinking is that if you want, my thinking is that internally, if you're like, shit, there's going to be another year gap, let's not go out of our way to remind the player base about year-long gaps. The fact that they keep bringing it up as something that they want to avoid says to me that they're on track to avoid it.
Hopefully. I don't remember enough about the precedent set with that and how what they said about it last time. I think you're right in the sense that I do remember them, for the most part, being pretty quiet about it on the whole until about 6 months later. Or, you know, several months after Draenor was announced, and we're like, okay, well, we should be seeing beta any day now. Mm-hmm. And they're like, nope, it's taking us longer because we hired people. Wait.
We hire people who were idiots.
Yeah. you know, and they said, you know, it's taking longer to get the new people, you know, on board and oriented and all that other shit. Okay, fine.
They had to watch the hiring process video. And it's like Chris Metzen. He's like, hi. I'm Chris Metzen, and welcome to the Blizzard family. Stay away from my stash.
Yeah. If you find suspicious white powder, don't approach your supervisor. Bring this matter directly to me, and it will be handled seriously.
But yeah, I don't think we'll see... I'm gonna be super optimistic about it. Maybe this will be the last time I'm optimistic about it. Maybe Blizzard shows me I shouldn't be optimistic about it, but I'm gonna hold out for the best. I say they announce and show us the next expansion at BlizzCon, and at BlizzCon is when they announce that Alpha's begun.
I hope that's what happens, but I'm in no way expecting or predicting that. I'm not making any predictions except that there will be an expansion announced, which is about the safest prediction one can make. And beyond that, I'm just like, wait and see. I'm going to see what
if the next expansion is the Self-Seize expansion that they've been rumored to be doing forever now, and they give you your own ship as the next evolution of the garrison?
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know.
And you can name your own ship.
That would be great, providing... that the entire expansion isn't swimming underwater a la Vashir.
Well, obviously you wouldn't be swimming in it if you've got a ship.
Yeah, but they're not going to have you on a ship for an entire expansion. Oh, I mean, this isn't a season of The Walking Dead.
God, that show got stupid.
Can we leave the farm already?
Alrighty, I think that's actually going to do it for episode 59 of Basically a Geek Show. Unless there is anything else that you'd like to bring up?
Nope, nothing at all. I think we've pretty much covered it.
Sounds good. You can catch us on Twitter at A Geek Show, which now has almost 400 followers. We've tripled the amount of followers our sister Twitter, Basically a Sports Show's Twitter, has.
Yeah, and actually I do want to give a shout out and a big thank you to anyone who actually is listening. I'll go into a very brief follow up from our last episode. Following our basically coming out and throwing our hat into the ring against the evil forces of the social justice warriors, our allies and compatriots in the Gamergate movement came out pretty much in droves and began following us on Twitter. And we just want to say, hey, thank you for all the support. And if any of you guys ever have an issue that you think you would like to hear us discuss on the show, by all means, hit us up at A Geek Show on the Twitbooks.
Indeed, indeed. You can catch us at A Geek Show. And, you know, if you prefer a bit of old-fashioned internet communication, we're at basicallygeekshow@gmail.com. And you can catch us on iTunes, on Spreaker, Stitcher, on YouTube, and of course on basicallyasportshow.com.
And if you want even more old-fashioned communication, look outside your bedroom window right now.
Hi.
What's up?
For Jack, this is Mike signing off.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen.